Turn with me to John 4. John 4 records the personal ministry of Jesus to one woman who reached the entire city. And I'm always fascinated with how Jesus deals with people. Many times when he's asked a question, he doesn't answer it directly. But he answers oftentimes what's really the issue behind the question. He always saw he always just could see right through a situation. And here, his disciples and he are together, they're busy in ministry. Verse 1, it says, when the Lord knew the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, although Jesus himself didn't baptize, but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria. Jesus wasn't going to get into a political confrontation with the Pharisees. And I remember something Gail said oftentimes, the system will never be on your side. And when we try to get on the side there and try to maneuver our way in, it just doesn't really work. It seems like we're forever going to be flying under the radar if we're going to be effective as ministers. But Jesus' hour hadn't come, and so he knew that it was not time to confront on that level, and so he knew his time was not there, and so he went and he wanted to leave and go to Galilee. Incredible to know what your purpose is, to know who you are and why you're called and what is your hour for. And I think as I look at Jesus, he knew incredibly what that was. I want to know, as Sandy so eloquently shared on vision, with that sophisticated PowerPoint presentation and everything, kind of intimidating, you know, when you get up here without all that stuff. And preparing for this message, my wife encouraged me with some thoughts. She said, whatever you do, don't try to sound intellectual or sophisticated or spiritual. Just be yourself. So you know how your wives can encourage you. But on September 11th, our hour came in a real way. I knew at that point our ministry had changed. Many, though, now are trying to get back to some sense of normalcy. But who knows when the next event will take place and how we'll need to be prepared for it. But there are some things I've learned in this time that hopefully can be translated into some usefulness. And certainly looking at the example of Jesus is a model for us. We had the blessing of it. Initially, we heard, when it happened, we assumed we'd lost a number of people. 15 people that we knew worked in the center, the trade center, and probably others who worked around it or in the city could have been caught there. So we had no idea what was really going to unfold. But amazing, the Lord had put things together to make it apparent that he had a plan for us. All these people in our body, not one of them was lost. And when we got together with each one of them, everyone had a story. Everyone had a reason why they weren't there. Jason was called out of town for a meeting, and Pete lost his job a month before, worked there. Caesar conspicuously was late that morning. One gentleman, Peter Wagner, his story is amazing. He was in the 92nd floor of Building 2 when it happened. He saw it. And immediately he started going downstairs, and the security stopped him and said, no, you don't have to worry. This building's secure. Stay in your offices. Well, the rescue people were telling people opposite, get out of the building. They were evacuating. But a number of people went back to their offices, and he said, no, I'm out of here. He kept going down, and by the 40th floor, they felt the building shake, and that's when it was hit. And they made it out, and it's been a traumatic thing for him. But, you know, you got to wonder, what's your purpose in life when the Lord has it designed to spare you? And so we had a sense of destiny that somehow or another we own New York at this point, that we needed to do something. We needed to take ownership. And I can't explain it other than that. But how to do it was another subject. And here is Jesus. He must go through Samaria. He needed to go through Samaria. Now, he didn't need to, but he needed to. There's almost a spiritual point there. He could have avoided, like the rest of the Pharisees, went around Samaria to get to Galilee because they wanted to avoid the confrontation with these very wicked people. The racial prejudice was strong. A lot of these were mixed among the peoples. And so they wanted to avoid it. Not Jesus. He didn't see racial barriers. He didn't see cultural barriers. He went through to get to Judea from to get to Galilee from Judea. You go up right through Samaria if you want to be direct. So he came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground which Jacob gave to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. And Jesus, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. So about noon, he's there by this well. In the encounter he's going to have with this woman from Samaria that we'll see, I want to point out six things. Actually, there's six situations or six things he says that give us 6 points as to what I would call and what Jesus examples here, patient evangelism. Being sensitive to someone. And again, we felt thrust into these things. Hours before the Trade Center was hit, I found myself on the Empire State Building. This was about 19 hours before. It was the late afternoon, the day before, looking at the World Trade Center with I was with a former captain of the Israeli Army who's now a tour guide, and we were discussing that attack that took place in 93. And when this happened the next day, we were already scheduled to be on the radio to talk about terrorism in Israel. It was weird. We had to drive up the turnpike, and we saw everything to our right. Then we had to make our way to the radio station. It seemed like the political leaders, even the Christian leaders, were struggling to try to get some semblance of order. What are we going to do? And even the people at the radio station were clueless as to how to go about ministering to so many people. It seemed like that just thrust us into it. The next 2 days later, after our Wednesday service, which is you probably experienced yourselves, were packed with people seeking answers. The Thursday came, and an opportunity arose for us to get on a ferry boat to go over there to Ground Zero area. We got down there, and it was just like everything the news said it was, and much worse, being there, smelling it, feeling it. Friday, Brian Broderson came up from Washington. He had been stuck there along with Tom Price, the editor of the Calvary Magazine, and a few friends. And we just kind of hooked up and began now thinking, what are we going to do from here? I've already scheduled everything different in the studies. We've focused the home groups now. They were going to be totally changed now to accommodate people that are going to come and search to be bases of operation. Every ministry thing that we had scheduled now had a new focus. And it seemed like the Lord was just opening these doors. We procured a number of books. One man gave us 5,000 free books. That was the perfect book called Anchor for the Soul. His name is Ray Pritchard. And it's just a beautiful presentation of the gospel, very sensitive, but very straightforward at the same time. And with these books going into the city, we got some at the Billy Graham Prayer Center. And then we found ourselves finding kind of the official status now of Red Cross workers ministering at Cantor Fitzgerald base of operation, which was at the plaza. So all these doors were opening, and Mike McIntosh was able to get us all of our credentials, because most of us Calvary Chapels don't have all those letters after our name that give us credentials with the Red Cross. So we got in there under his authority, and we're able to minister to some families. But in that official capacity, it was limited. Seems like, they make you go through so many hoops to be able to touch a life. And they're concerned. There was some weird people. There were people that would go to these centers, and try to be official chaplains. One guy had Jesus in black magic marker wrapped on his, on his forehead. Another guy had chaplain in magic marker, and trying to be official. So they have all kinds of different people in there. So I could see their concern, but we found it was just difficult to really touch families until we discovered where a lot of the people were. And a lot of the people who weren't directly hit, but who lost their homes down in Lower Manhattan because they couldn't go back to them, they had family or friends or someone they worked with was hurt. There was a tremendous number of people hurting down in Union Square. And so we found ourselves ministering down there an entire night, Monday night, and all day Tuesday, and a Tuesday night. And just as Jesus shows us how to encounter, these are things that really helped us. So the fact that Jesus had to go through Samaria is the first point. You see, where the Spirit is leading you, how is the door open for you? It may be totally unique where you are. But the second point is Jesus amazingly builds a bridge. In verse 7, A woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. So the disciples go into the city. Now, they're going to have a great ministry impact in the city. No, they're just thinking about food. And they're going to come back with food, and they're going to wonder about food and why Jesus isn't eating food. And food is on their mind. Where the Lord sits there by the well, wearied. Now, I often wonder sometimes even the simplest things that happen to me. If I desire, a cheeseburger, you know, maybe there's a purpose in that. And sometimes you can't freak yourself out with this stuff, but you never know how God ordains things. So I just kind of go through life, and it seems like the Lord always puts something there. And this woman comes, and so he asks her for a drink. Now, the first thing he does here is gets her attention. He builds a bridge here. Now, this goes against the same old cheat experience because, first of all, she was shocked. She says, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." She was shocked at this because he's going against every cultural moré and, you know, the feeling that you normally have in a social situation. To go against that, you kind of feel a little bit different. We so often conform ourselves to things. I've used the illustration often of how, you know, as an example, you go into an elevator. And what's the first thing you do when you step into an elevator? You turn around and you look at the numbers on the ceiling. If you don't do that, it's going to seem weird. Try it. Just stand there and face everybody next time and see if they're not talking about you after you leave. One thing I like to do, actually, is if there's a crowded elevator that you step into, I step in and I don't turn around, I face them and I say, "I suppose you wonder why I've gathered you here today." And it's funny because it just breaks the ice. People laugh and then you kind of break the ice, you open a conversation. And here's what Jesus is doing. It's almost like he's throwing something out to get her attention. "Give me a drink." But more than that, what he's doing, because of who this kind of a woman is at 12 noon out to draw water rather than in the morning with the rest of the women, it's a little suspect about her reputation, which we'll find out later, of course, in the text. But he elevates her by asking her for this. Now, in our language, it sounds pretty rude. "Give me a drink." You know, if we went into a place and said, "Give me a drink," that wouldn't really build a bridge. It's not going to help any social intercourse here. But what he does is actually in that culture, by needing her help, raises her to a position equal with himself. That astounds her. And that's why she says, "How is it? I'm a woman, Jew, and you're a Samaritan woman. You're talking to me." Because he doesn't see all that stuff. He is actually lifting her up. And I think one of the most effective ways we'll ever reach people is not when they're a project. Not when, you know, we just determined to tell them about Jesus and they don't want to hear about it, then I don't have time for you, and we go on to somebody else. I've seen this in street ministry in the past. It's not really building a bridge. And you might have all the right answers, but if you haven't built a bridge, you're not following Jesus' example. He treated this woman with dignity and respect, and he honored her. He elevated her. At Union Square, we saw a lot of street preachers vying for attention, lots of street ministry, even political debates that were going on, a whole host of hurting people. There were a bunch of cultists out there, thousands of people looking at these pictures that showed missing, you know, at that time. That was just hitting people's hearts. Rolls of paper that were rolled out and people were writing their thoughts and their prayers on them. And the most notable, however, the one that had the most attention of everybody in this huge park, with thousands of people crowded into it, was this crazy street musician who had a crowd around him because he had some, he'd play music, Peter Frampton or some rock thing, and, you know, he was just looking for some money. You know, he had his little guitar case out there for donations. But it was something about having music that was therapeutic for these people. They just wanted to listen to something. One thing he also did is he opened the microphone. When we came over and approached him, we had contacted our staff to bring down a team of musicians, and we wanted to do something, but we had no power system in order to do anything, and you're just totally drowned out. This guy had everybody's attention. So the first thing we did was we actually went over to him, and we asked if we could, you know, share a song or a poem or whatever, and he opened the mic to us, and yet it was still kind of a tough thing to really get the point across. then we kind of, I just took a step of faith, and I noticed he'd been out there for a long time. And I says, "All right, how long have you been out here?" And he says, "I've been out here for 24 hours straight." I says, "Really? Aren't you tired?" He goes, "I'm so exhausted, I can't even think." I says, "You know what? I tell you what, why? I'm sure you don't want to lose this spot. This is a very good spot. Why don't you go home? You sleep for 8 hours. We'll be here. We'll hold your spot. When you come back, we'll give it back to you." So I'm thinking, at least I just bought 8 hours of ministry time if he takes me up on it. He goes, "That's a great idea, but I don't want to leave my equipment." I go, "We got a problem here." And I thought, "Wait a minute, we don't have a problem. This is New York City. We can get anything we need." So he had this battery-powered thing that was kind of unique. I'd never seen anything like it. But just down the street at 42nd Street Music, we sent some sound guys. They got the equipment exactly in an hour. We had the same thing he had set up. And he was blowing his mind. So he says to the crowd, "These people are going to keep this thing going. Look, they've got equipment. They've got Jesus in their corner. Freedom of speech, you know." And so I came on, introduced the thing, and I said, "Hey, you know, this guy's been out here for 24 hours trying to encourage you. Let's give him a hand." And so we gave him a hand, you know, and then he left and did his thing, and we continue to minister. And I said, "You know, we're going to keep this microphone open." So we had a bridge there to build, and if we'd have tried to control it, it would have killed it. If we'd have tried, "Okay, now we're going to do our thing," it would have killed it totally. So we kept the microphone open. I said, "If you've got a poem or a song or anything you want to share, just see my man over here, and he'll get you in the line, and we'll give the opportunity." And we did a couple of things by that man over there. He kind of monitored, you know, I mean, there were some weird ones that came through. We kind of kept putting them at the bottom, and we had a few people that just had sometimes an innocuous thing. One lady, she said she had this. She wanted to do this chant. I got an Eastern chant I want to do. What else do you got? She said, "Well, I do. I know you guys are Christians, so I do have kind of an old spiritual, you know." That sounds good. So she got up, and she was a professional entertainer, and she had she brought in more people than we could have ever done with any of our songs. She started leading in the song, "Wading in the Water," singing all the lyrics to it and clapping, had everybody just like in this moment. People were coming out of the woodwork, and then when she was done, I thanked her, and you know, I said, "Thank you, Lisa." She said, "No, Liza. I'm sorry, Liza. I'm in New York. I forgot." So it was amazing. Then we just shared the gospel and just opened the door. So the Lord opened a neat door. I mean, we tried our best, and as Jesus really does with this woman, building that bridge. And yet what he does with this is quite amazing. By building this bridge, it opens a door for him to really reach her. We found that reaching people, we needed to build a bridge. And so the kind of the code word there was patient evangelism, which we said was 90% empathy, listening to people, and 10% sharing. So it wasn't about passing out tracts. It wasn't about having all of our blazing T-shirts, you know, with Christian symbols and pushing people because they perceive that as us taking advantage of a hurting situation. So what we did was we just would send teams out and we just share with them. And then when we had this open microphone situation, I just kind of facilitated it. And from time to time, when it was time, you had the crowd changing every 20 minutes. We estimated there was always about 300-400 people in the crowd. We estimated we started at 2 in the afternoon. We didn't stop till 11 at night. And it was a constant flow of people. And we could have probably kept going if our minds were coherent after that point. We just kept going for it. The musician never came back, so we never stopped. And, you know, the amazing thing is you don't have to, with this, feel like you've got to be somebody's everything. You know, there's that pressure that we feel to share the gospel with people. That's a good pressure. The Lord's given us that example, but we need to be wise. We need to be sensitive to where a person is. And if you feel like you've got to be somebody's everything, it may not be the time. You know, that was the hardest thing to learn in this time, is when to shut up, when to wait, when to listen to somebody. You know, whether it was a man, I was walking down before we did this, the night before, I was in Union Square and just out sharing individually, personally, and saw a guy there with a cast in his leg, and as I was walking by, I looked at him, I said, "You weren't in the Trade Center when that happened." He goes, "Yeah, I was." I said, "Get out of here." And I said, "What happened?" You know, so I sat with him, and I mean, he just had a story to tell. 26th floor, Sun Microsystems was where he was working, and when it all happened, You know, he got out, but it was not without the building crumbling, and he tripped in the smoke and broke his leg, and you know, all the stuff that he was sharing and going through. And I just listened. I just listened. Asking a few questions about the situation and listen, how are you coping with it? And then I told him what I was doing there. And I says, we were there just trying to encourage people, listen to their stories. And I was helping with the American Red Cross up at the family center. And, you know, and so it opened the door. And then I told our whole team, don't bring tracts and handfuls of books around, you know, have some in your pocket. And if the Lord opens a door, then give it to them, but don't push it. And so we'd have one. I'd always have one. I knew there was a box over there, but I always just had one or two with me. And so I said, look, I've got this book. This has been a great encouragement to a lot of people. I want you to have it. And he'd go, wow, thank you. And he would, because the bridge was built, he was more likely to listen to it and to read it. Where a lot of people were passing out tracts, they were just going into the trash. So patient. Jesus shows this. I mean, here he is, the Son of God, and yet he opens his door, give me a drink. But notice what he does. Jesus answered and says, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. You would have asked him. See, I'm asking you for a drink. You would have asked me if you knew who I was. Now, this does a couple of things. It kind of rises her interest level. What's this man talking about? It's kind of an interesting thing. Now, it appeals to an Easterner. They love puzzles. They love enigmas. And there are certain truths that you can't teach people. They have to learn for themselves. So when he makes a statement like this with this enigma to it, it's very appealing to their mentality because they want to try to figure out, what are you talking about? Who are you that this is so important? And this basically what he does is he raises her interest. Now, there were people that were hurting out there in the street, and one particular situation struck me as a great lesson of what not to do. There were some young guys out there with a guitar, and they were trying to sing songs and talk with people about the gospel. I mean, it was great that they were out there, that they were willing to go out there. But they were a little impatient with some people, and one guy came over and was listening to them, and then they saw an opportunity. They started sharing with a guy, and then this Buddhist guy walks by, all in his Buddhist garb. And the Buddhist starts asking some questions, and the Christian got real belligerent with the Buddhist. Because, you know, after all, you're a different religion, and you don't have anything to do with the truth, and you're leading people astray, and that was the way he was approaching it. While this guy was watching, he was offended. Why are you treating this guy? Now, this Buddhist was just, he was just smiling from ear to ear. I think being in the park, he never felt so much love in his entire life. You know, he's just happy to be there. And he was smiling, and this Christian was coming down on him, and this observer was watching this going, why are you doing this? You know, he's got a legitimate religion, and who do you think you are? And of course, then the Christian started arguing with that guy. Well, we came over and kind of trying to bail this guy out, and found out that this guy that was listening to the Christian, who was offended at this, lost 5 friends in the World Trade Center. And he was shocked. He was just in shell shock. And had that person taken the time with him to find out where he's really coming from, he would have understood it's not a religious debate here. It's about really answers for real needs. But let's build a bridge before you can give it. And so Jesus builds a bridge, and now her interest is rising up as he takes the time. We found all the stuff we normally would do in a street ministry, from the Christian t-shirts to the tracts to the, you know, even praying in public. I tried to get the guys to refrain from doing that, because what it did was it made people around them feel like they were a project rather than people for whom there is the love of God that is there. So just some things we learned. And then Jesus goes on, of course. The woman says, sir, you have nothing to draw with. The well is deep. Where are you going to get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and livestock? Verse 13, Jesus answered and said, whoever drinks of the water will thirst again. This water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water I shall give him will never thirst. The water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of living water springing up into everlasting life. He goes from getting her attention to raising her interest to arousing her desire here. Now there is a significant thing that's really hitting her because of what he's sharing. He's taking it to the next level. He still hasn't come right out with what he's going to say. He's still getting her to the point now she's very interested. Notice her response. Sir, give me this water that I may not thirst nor come here to draw. Now, it's important to know that a lot of times when I'm studying this, I don't get the feeling that she actually believed it was real water. But we sometimes assume that they were really clueless, like Nicodemus. You know, can a man enter his mother's womb when he's old? He's a smart man. He knows that can't happen. It's just their way of expressing, I know you don't mean that, so tell me what you really mean. What are you trying to say to me? And I think this is what the woman is saying. He says, I know it's not real water, but I want whatever it is you're talking about. I'm interested. I'm very desiring of that. I used to secretly admire those guys that would be bold enough to get out on the street corner and just start belting out the gospel, because they didn't care what people think. They just went out there and they went for it. And, you know, I think there's a place for that ministry in certain places. But now I really see, in many respects, it can be a lazy approach to ministry, because you don't have to take the time to think it through. You just go out there and just belt out the truth. You don't have to be sensitive to who you're speaking to. You don't have to pray for an open door. Just get out there in the street corner and do it. And I think in many respects, I'd rather have the time waiting and listening to the Spirit of God to show me where is going to be the most effectual door. Even Paul the Apostle. This guy, you know, as bold as anything, nothing could stop him. But you ever watch his ministry closely to see when he went into a city? He didn't just go preaching on the corner. He didn't just go belting it out. He didn't just go pushing it in people. He came in among people. Even he tells the Thessalonican church, you know, when I came among you, I came in you gentle as a nursing mother. Very sensitive. You know, in three times in the epistles, in Ephesians 6, in Colossians 4, and 2 Thessalonians 3, three times he asks for prayer so that he would have an effectual door, so that the word of God would go forth, that he could speak the mystery of Christ, that an open door would be there, that the word would be swift and run. He's praying for an effectual open door. Hear this bold man, because you know what? It's not about just getting out there and doing it. It's about being sensitive. And here, Jesus, he shows such great sensitivity with this woman to take the time to let her interest get, her attention be got, her interest rise a little bit. Now her desire is getting into it. And so now he's got her attention. And I love what he does now. The woman, Jesus says to her, go call your husband and come here. You know, the time that we had in Union Square was quite amazing. We knew we couldn't control it. We had the open mic. With that open mic came a number of amazing stories. One guy, a Jamaican Christian man, lost his brother, and he shared something that brought in tons of people. And there was a 10-year-old girl that got up and sang this song, a 10-year-old girl in dreadlocks. Real neat song. One woman came forward. She was planning on getting married that next week. Her sister was going to be her bridesmaid, but her sister lost her husband in the Trade Center. So she postponed her wedding, and she had a poem about the situation. One thing after another, 10 hours of this type of story and ministry and poems, and people's interest was there. And many Christians were waiting for some leadership there were lots of Christians in that crowd, too, that were waiting for some leadership to give them a viable opportunity to talk to people. Every major news service was there, in fact. ABC was there. You see, they were trying to get down to Ground Zero. The National Guard wouldn't let them, or the authorities wouldn't let them down. So the next best place was to go where the crowds were, and Union Square was one major crowd area. So NBC, Fox, CNN. In fact, one of our guys that shared the gospel at that particular soundbite, he was on CNN the next night. And we got interviewed by major Japanese news service. I was interviewed by Rolling Stone magazine, of all things. But we saw some fantastic things. But, you know, with all the bridge building, at some point there comes a time when the bridge is built, now you got to get to the point. And here's what Jesus is now doing. Friendship evangelism only works if at some point you get to the point. You know, you can be a friend, have lots of friends out there, but if you never confront them with the truth, then you know, all the friendships that you have aren't going to really do anything. Here, Jesus earns the right in a way to get to this point where now he's going to get to the point, and there's two things about the point, and that's sin and salvation. So the first thing he deals with is that she sees her need. So he says, go call your husband. And the woman says, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, well, you have well said, I have no husband. For you've had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. And this you've spoken truly. Of course, that's quite a confrontation. That's quite pretty personal. Of course, the woman does what any normal person would do in that situation. She tries to change the subject to religion. She says, sir, I perceive you're a prophet. And our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say in Jerusalem is a place where one ought to worship. It's a natural defensive mechanism. You know, as soon as you get close enough to someone to be able to say something to them personally, then oftentimes they're going to change the subject. But I love what Jesus does. Now, sin is very, very subtle. With this woman, been through five husbands, you know, each situation got worse and worse. It never made her happy. You know, she's gone through all this stuff. She's been burned a few times. And about this time, she probably feels that life is just a tough situation she's got to deal with. So she doesn't even bother getting married the next time. And here Jesus confronts her. And I think it's important to know, the Bible does say the law is a tutor that leads us to Christ. The Samaritans had basically closed their door to the clear presentation of the law. They kind of mixed it in. They had what I see in America, kind of the high place religion. Whatever's convenient. It's more convenient to worship God this way. Or creating a God that, and this is where our generation is, they create a God in their own image. Well, if I were God, this is what I would be like. And you know, people say, I believe in God. What kind of a God? They're worshiping the God that they've manufactured. So it's important for us to be truthful and honest. And Jesus wants her to be very clear on where her life is. She's changing the subject to religion. And so he gets back to the point. He says, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you'll neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. I love what he does. Do you know, even now, he's so sensitive. He's not going to argue with her about that point. He says, there's going to come a time when you're absolutely right, lady. You're absolutely right. That's not going to matter. That's going to come a time. He says, you worship what you don't know. We worship what we know, for salvation is of the Jews. Now, he does say the truth, that it is clear through the Jews that salvation came. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. For God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. I think it's kind of fun to compare what Jesus says to this woman with what he said to Nicodemus. We would think, talking to a woman of the street, we'd want to talk about being born again. And he talks to this woman about religion, when you'd think Nicodemus would be the guy you talked about religion. Isn't that amazing? Here he tells her what true worship is all about. But I love how he does it. He's sensitive to not blow her away with, you know, well, you're wrong. And, you know, this is the issue so often we're going to get into. As soon as you get into a dialogue with someone, well, there's the right and the wrong. Someone's right, someone's wrong. And we feel often apt, you know, wanting to point out you're wrong. And that's not really the issue as much as how Jesus does it, that the real issue is coming. How he says, the real issue is coming. And then, I love it how it comes to this. The woman says to him, I know the Messiah is coming. I know the Messiah is coming, who is called the Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things. And Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. So, if you looked at these points, he got her attention, number one. He rose her interest level, number two. Her desire was aroused, number three. And number four, actually, I correct myself on that. The first point was that he was led by the Spirit. Then he built the bridge, number two, and got her attention. Three, the fact that her interest was aroused. Four, that her desire was now lifted up. And then five, the fact that he reveals about sin. And then six, he reveals himself. Six points that I see in this passage. He reveals himself. I who speak to you am he. And that is the point. That's where we want to get to. It's about Jesus. It's all about him. But how do we get there? How do we take a person where they are and their their multicultural mentality, this pluralistic nation that they live in, this very much like Samaria mentality, because, you know, for their sake, it didn't matter where you worshiped. It doesn't really matter what you believe, as long as you are sincere, and this is the mentality. How do you get from that type of person to tell them it's Jesus? It's about building a bridge. It's about taking them to a point just as sensitive and as patient Jesus was. And you know what? This is not easy in many respects. This is like, Lord, give me wisdom. Lord, help me. Show me. While you're talking to someone, God, give me the words to say. Help me, Lord. I want to be sensitive because Jesus gave us this model. Well, at that point, his disciples came. They marveled that he was talking with a woman. And yet no one said, what do you seek or why are you talking with her? The woman then left her water pot, went her way into the city and said to the men, come and see a man who told me all things I ever did. Could this be the Christ? So they came out of the city. They came to him. In the meantime, I want you to jump to verse 39. We'll get back to the meantime. Many of the disciples, or many of the Samaritans of that city believed in him because of the word of the woman who testified, he told me all things that I ever did. Many believed because of this woman. She was so changed. There was something about her. Now again, picture this. The disciples go into the city. They're his disciples. They're coming out with food. Very little impact. And the only impact that they did have in another place is they wanted to call fire down out of heaven on the Samaritans because they didn't receive their witness. Not a real way to minister. Here, Jesus is sitting on a well and he reaches the entire city. You know, sometimes we weigh things differently. As a pastor, I've got to see how Jesus sees things because I think bigger is better and doing this and doing that, and we've got to get everybody's attention. And you know, it might just be a single individual that you run into the grocery store, and God will affect a change. And I want to be sensitive to those divine appointments because they make or break a ministry. That is the difference between effectiveness and ineffectiveness. It's individuals. Jesus is, I mean, he was preaching to thousands, yet he took the time with this woman. And as it turns out, it was more effective than all his disciples could have done there in the city and all that they ever did. One woman. They said they believed. So when the Samaritans had come to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days, and verse 41 tells it all. Many more believed because of his own word. Now they've been introduced to Jesus himself. They said to the woman, now we believe not because of what you said, for we ourselves have heard him, and we know that this is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world. What a powerful testimony and an example of patient evangelism. And I'll tell you, for me, I want that in my own life. I want to have an effect on an individual. I don't want to go through life thinking about all these big things I want to do. It's about individuals, about people. It might just be one person that God's put in your path. Maybe your ministry, you're struggling along with five people in a Bible study. It seems like nothing's happening here in the South. And you've thought about calling fire down out of heaven a few times yourself. But God knows that one individual that he might want you to pour your life into, the challenge. Back to the disciples. They came and said, Rabbi, eat. And he says, I have food to eat of which you don't know. And the disciples said, did anyone bring him anything? Philip, you sneak him a sandwich? Jesus said, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. See, that's exactly what Jesus was doing by staying there by that well. He was doing the will of the Father. He was sensitive to the leading of the Holy Spirit. He built a bridge with this woman and patiently brought her to realize that he was the Messiah. Amazing picture. And then he tells his disciples, Do you not say there are still 4 months and then comes the harvest? Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look at the fields, for they are already white for harvest. And he who reaps receives wages and gathers fruit for eternal life, that both he who sows and he who reaps may rejoice together. For in this the saying is true, one sows and another reaps. And I've sent you to reap for that which you've not labored. Others have labored and you have entered into their labors. I'm not going to really expound on that. It's just the exhortation. But I will say this. What can we do at this point? Obviously, it seems far removed now what's happened. Everything's returning back to normal. Even in New York, if you go into Midtown, it seems like business as usual. But that's not really the case. That only appears to be that way. Everything seems to be back to normal. People are just as hard with the looks, you know, they're not as open and friendly on the streets. It's getting back to the old New York, but that's only a surface. We have probably this month coming in another 150 people from different Calvaries around the nation. We're going to be directing into the city. We have a feeding station that we've been working with Safe Harbor. And Safe Harbor actually started it. Now we're supplying some of the resources and the people, as well as all the people that are coming in are taking a schedule there to serve food to the workers there at Ground Zero. But more than that, it's just being on the streets of New York, being in the subways, and you turn to somebody and you say, "So were you here when it happened?" That's all you got to say. It's all you have to say to open up an amazing door, because they've got a story. Here's the problem. You've got 3 million people that live in Manhattan, many more people who work in Manhattan. Everyone had something in their story, whether they were caught in the city, they couldn't get out, what that meant to their families, someone they knew, someone that they worked with. There's so many stories, but you got so many stories and no one to tell them to. And that's the problem. Now you come in as a tourist and you want to listen to their story, they'll be more than happy to tell you their story, and you've just built the most incredible bridge to be able to share the gospel with them. That's why it's still very much alive as far as ministry in New York. And so we're encouraging people. We've focused in this direction. We've got a number of things going on. If you want to get a team together and come up, we're going to continue this probably through June. However, you should probably contact the guy who's overseeing that. His name is Dan, and you can contact him at our church. You can even use the email address, dan@ccob.org. So dan@ccob.org, if you have any questions, you want to bring somebody. We'd love to get you mobilized and get a youth group mobilized, anybody, because you'll find those doors open. But encourage them with patient evangelism. We'll show them some of the videos. We'll share some of these principles before they go out, but you can reiterate those. I want to close now with just the outreach I talked about in Union Square, and it's quite a moving experience to see this. We put this together on the fly. This was ready the next day, actually, after this happened, to give to the Billy Graham Training Center, and they were using it to share with people so they would have sensitivity going out. This is the Union Square outreach, and let's go to the videotape.